Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on fluoride fantasies when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only upon the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of this income tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to over 60%. By the time Franklin Roosevelt was done, the top tax rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. Now, back in 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th in order to earn enough money to satisfy the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family has to work or had to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal tax, their state tax, and local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, said economist Daniel J. Mitchell, he reported that they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us today? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And the income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. And that's because the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security tax is the eighth plank. Now, that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number to call again, 417-273-4967. Now, tax and status is available on compact disc. That's our school for home education. If you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. ORG or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we took up the subject of fluoride. Fluoride's about as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. Everybody's got some. It's in the water supplies of nearly every municipality here in the United States, at any rate. It's not very common in Europe anymore. Europe is now 98% fluoride-free. Now, there might be something that those Europeans learned, knew about, found out, researched, that maybe we Americans ought to know about. Maybe there's something about this fluoride that you and I need to know. Last time I reported to you that Dr. Hayroth, and that's doctor, I underlined doctor, you know, he's a somebody, with letters after his name, Dr. Hayroth is a proponent of fluoridation, and yet when testifying under oath at congressional hearings to the question, would you give fluoridated water to one of your patients with kidney trouble, he answered no. The advice that I would give is that he drink fluoride-free spring water. That was Dr. Francis Hayroth of the Kettering Institute in Cincinnati, Ohio. So I raised the question, well, my God, if you wouldn't recommend fluoridated water for a kidney patient, well, then why would you recommend fluoridated water for a person with healthy kidneys? And I cited to you the fact that heart patients, as soon as they have a heart attack, are advised by their doctors to stop eating pork. Has it ever occurred to anybody that maybe we ought to stop eating pork before we have a heart attack, and that maybe if we did that, it would prevent the heart attack? I don't know. It's just a wild new concept. Just flew into my mind when I thought about Leviticus chapter 11 and Deuteronomy 14. You know, the creator of the universe told you not to eat pig. Now, of course, he didn't know what he was talking about, and we're smarter than he is, and so we eat pig because it's full of riboflavin. That's what I saw one health professional say. Jesus, pig meat, it's full of riboflavin. Hell, strychnine might be full of riboflavin also. Why don't we eat more strychnine? I don't know. Maybe there's some good health benefits to some of these poisons. But just because there's vitamins and minerals in a poison doesn't make it fit to drink or fit to eat now, does it? Well, in any event, it crossed my mind that maybe, just maybe, if heart patients shouldn't eat pork, that maybe they shouldn't eat pork before they become heart patients. And that if kidney patients shouldn't be drinking fluoridated water, that maybe you and I shouldn't drink fluoridated water before we become kidney patients. Since kidney damage can be caused by fluoride, there can be a vicious circle by which kidney damage causes more fluoride retention, which in turn causes further kidney damage, so says Frederick G. Exner, M.D. My God, here's another one of these M.D.s. Let me underline his name. I mean, if I came in here and told you this, you'd say, who in the hell are you? But I'm telling you that this is Dr. Hayroth and Dr. Frederick Exner. These people have letters behind their names. Now, once renal function is severely impaired, renal, R-E-N-A-L, I think that's kidney function for all of us plumbers. Once kidney function is severely impaired, the excretion of fluoride in the urine decreases and serum fluoride concentration increases. Reported by K. Kono et al. In the Industrial Health Magazine, Volume 22, page 33 through 40, back in 1984. So this isn't some new doctrine that I just dreamed up. Boys and girls, been around for a few years. Many studies have indicated suspicious biochemical events, especially in the kidneys, when consuming one part per million or more, up to five parts per million in our study, fluoride ion in drinking water. Harold Warner, Professor Emeritus, Yerkes Regional Primate Center, Emory University, June 20th, 1983. Bear in mind that all elderly folk eventually have had one degree or another of diminished renal kidney function and will accumulate higher tissue levels of fluoride at a time when their tolerance capacities are diminished. John R. Lee, M.D. Kind of good to underline his name, too. It would also seem prudent to monitor the fluoride intake of patients with chronic renal kidney impairment, particularly those living in areas of high naturally occurring fluoride, children, those with excessive thirst, and those with prolonged disease. Position paper on fluoride, National Kidney Foundation, page 2, August 16, 1980. Sodium fluoride is a very toxic chemical. It reacts with growing tooth enamel and with bones to produce irreversible damage. It may injure the nervous system, kidneys, and other tissues of susceptible individuals. Fluoride is not a necessary trace element for dental health. Uniform dosage of any drug dissolved in the water supply is obviously impossible. Some individuals may drink 10 times as much as others. Thirst may or has many variables. Dr. Granville F. Knight, M.D., Santa Barbara, California. Until recently, I favored fluoridation of the city water supply in the proposition of one part per million. But information provided me by Dr. C.C. Bass, Dean Emeritus of Tulane Medical School for the past 15 years, who has pursued research and study pertaining to teeth, along with some research done by British scientists indicating possible bad effects on the kidneys from fluoridation, has caused me to reverse my opinion on the matter. That's Dr. Alton Ochsner, President Ochsner Foundation Hospital and head of the Department of Surgery at Tulane University Medical School in New Orleans, Louisiana. And you are absolutely correct in stating that many people have diabetes. but don't know it or don't know that. In the U.S., approximately half of the estimated 12 million people who have the disease do not realize that they have it. Diabetic care also depends on whether the individual suffers from complications associated with diabetes, such as kidney failure, coronary artery disease, etc. And according to the National Institute of Dental Research, fluoride levels in water are set according to normal consumption of water. If an individual is consuming abnormally large quantities of water, he should drink bottled water. Department of Health and Human Services letter, January 4, 1991. Nearly all diabetics and many athletes drink abnormally large quantities of water. Many drink over a gallon a day. Therefore, the Public Health Service is saying that these people should buy bottled water because it can be documented that fluorides were given as medication for hyperthyroid patients. It should be considered the obvious cause for hyperthyroidism and other thyroid hormone function-related disorders, according to ADHD, or including rather, not, get this straight, including ADHD, arthritis, osteoporosis, etc., especially at intake levels as high as they are. Comes from Thyroid Hormones, page 5, by Andreas Schuld, Parents of Fluoride Poisoned Children, PFPC, Vancouver, BC, Canada. I don't know what PFPC means, but I cite it because it's there. Now, fluoride decreases the function of the thyroid gland by 30 to 40%. Huh. Well, now that's surprising. Let me underline that one. Did you know that fluoride decreases the function of the thyroid gland by 30 to 40%? And this is one of the most important glands in your body. Well, I didn't know that either. But now I do. In several parts of our country, children receive tablets with fluorine, but the fluoridation of drinking water has not been accomplished, or where it has not been accomplished. We trust that it will not happen in view of the special circumstances here regarding our thyroid problem. Research here demonstrates clearly an antagonism between iodine and fluorine. And we also showed in another experiment that the calcium metabolism is greatly affected by fluorine, since your bones pick up 30% less calcium in the presence of fluorine. The danger of osteoporosis in a growing organism is very great. Dr. T. Gordonoff, professor of pharmacology in Bern, Switzerland. All right, now, ladies, this osteoporosis that you're concerned about. Here's the connecting link, fluorine in your water. And that's because your thyroid gland operates at about 30 to 40% less. And your bones pick up 30% less calcium in the presence of fluorine. So if you want to limit the calcium intake of your body, then you want to drink more fluoride. On the other hand, if you want more calcium in your body, I guess we ought to eliminate, or we want to limit, the intake of fluoride. All right, now this is a story that comes out of, let's see if I can identify this one. I can't. It doesn't have anything on it. I don't know where that came from, kids. Oh, maybe I do too. Down here at the bottom of the page, we have posted over 100 studies documenting the adverse effects of fluoride on the thyroid gland from the past 70 years or so in the virtual library of fluoride research at www.bruha.com. That's spelled B-R-U-H-A. So go to www.bruha.com. And Andreas Schuld, S-C-H-U-L-D, Parents of Fluoride Poisoned Children, Vancouver, B.C., Canada. All right, now that'll tell you a little bit about another article there on fluoride. There isn't anything in here that's good about fluoride, kids. And the reason I'm making this report is to give you an opportunity to do something about it. Now, what I did about it was when I left the city, and that's because unless you want to stink real bad, you have to take a bath every once in a while, at least a couple, three times a year. And every time you take a bath, you take in 10 times more fluoride through your skin than you do when you drink water from the city. 10 times more by bathing. Let me repeat that. Bathing in the water exposes you to 10 times more fluoride than drinking the water. Kids, forget about the drinking. Drink all of the water you can get in your body, but don't bathe in it. That's the bottom line. Now, if you can't live in the city without bathing, or bathing in the fluoridated water, then that's motivation to get the hell out of the city. Now, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Paris, France, and Moscow in Russia treat their drinking water in a little different way. They use ozone. Ozone. They ozonate the water. I don't know if it costs more or less, but it kills the bacteria and the viruses in the water. And you can have purified water without fluoride and without chlorine. Tuck that one away in your heart. Now, if your city has elected to use fluoride or chlorine in the water, then that's a choice that the people in the city council and the mayor's office have made. And I did a job one time for a lady out in Cortez, Colorado, and she came to me at Barrister's Inn when we were in Boise, Idaho, and she said, "I'm really opposed to this fluoride in the water. And the chlorine, I don't mind. I don't mind dying from a stroke or from a heart attack caused by arterial sclerosis, which is caused by the chlorine in my water, but this fluoride is going too far." And I said, "Well, lady, as far as I know, nearly every city in the country has fluoride." I was living in Boise, Idaho at the time, and I didn't have a clue as to what the problem with fluoride was. Not a clue. I couldn't have cared less. And she brought this fluoride thing to my attention when she said that fluoride over there is a deadly toxic poison and it kills people. And I looked at her like, well, then why would they put it in the drinking water if it kills people? I mean, look, lady, you got to be stupid. There's a lot of things that we put in as additives because we need them. Because real smart people that go to college and study those things come to those conclusions and they do those things for us because we need those things done for us because we're not smart enough to do them for ourselves. You know, let me give you an illustration. Here in the Midwest, in the middle section of the United States, there's a shortage of iodine in the soil. There's a shortage of iodine, which is a necessary trace element that we all need. And without iodine, it causes goiter. Now, I'm not sure that goiter is all that bad for you, but it's this Adam's apple that people have, you know. I haven't seen it for years and years here in the United States. When I was a kid, it was pretty prevalent. You'd be watching somebody talk, and he'd have this little knot in his throat, and it would kind of jump up and down. I remember a guy worked at the Harold Castile Lumber Company and drove forklift. And when that guy talked, this knot just kind of jumped, you know, up and down his throat from his chin down to his collarbone, and it was pretty funny. But anyway, that's called goiter. See, well, somebody somewhere along the line woke up one day and said, "Well, what we need to do is put iodine in the salt. Everybody eats salt. So if we put iodized salt out there in the marketplace, people would get iodine and then that would go away." And they did, and it did. It went away. You don't see people with goiter here in the United States. Now, that goes to show you that we need additives. Now, for some reason, God messed up again. You know, he didn't put enough iodine out here in the Midwest. And we needed to solve that problem. And so we fixed God's mistake there. And so we came to the conclusion that this thing of putting additives into our food supply over there is a pretty good thing. And so we do that in breast milk. You know, we have 106 elements in a woman's breast milk. Did you know that? And there's more than that. There's more elements there, but we haven't identified them. We don't know what they do yet. So we're busily spending taxpayer dollars researching breast milk to find out what God hid away in that stuff. And so instead of feeding them breast milk, we give them Enfamil now, say, or Similac, or some artificial Kraft or Nestle concocted formula, we call it, you know, baby's milk formula. And it has 12 ingredients. Isn't that special? 12. Now, your breast milk, ladies, has 106, and we don't know about the rest because we're still looking. It looks like God was working overtime, put too much in there. So we came along and said, well, there's way too many nutrients and enzymes and other stuff in woman's breast milk. It probably is unhealthy for your child, so let's feed them Similac. So they came up with a chemical concoction to take its place so we could fix God's mistake again. And you know, we spend about half of our time, effort, and energy fixing God's mistakes. You know that? You stop and think about that. And we're very curious, we human beings are, especially here in America. We want to know about the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. And so we give out grants and millions and millions of dollars to study the breeding habits of mayflies and the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. And we want to know why things work that way. And so we had a guy named Carl Sagan, spent his entire life. He's dead now, but he was studying billions and billions and billions of light years. And he was one of these astrophysicists, I guess. Or an astronomer or something like that. He was an evolutionist. He used to be on PBS a lot. I just liked old Sagan. He couldn't talk. He had a speech impediment. It wasn't billions. It was billions and billions. You know, he sounded like the Kennedys, you know, from Massachusetts. Those people up there in Massachusetts suffer from speech impediment. Well, anyway, the moral to the story here is that old Carl was constantly looking for the origin of the universe. And I don't know how much money that guy got paid every year looking for the origin of the universe, the origin of the universe. My God, I hope they never find it, because if they do, the unemployment rate's going to skyrocket here in America, because we've got millions of scientists looking for the origin of the universe. And if they ever find it and write a report and say, okay, we found it, the origin of the universe, now what in the hell are we going to spend money on? Thank God they never find the origin of the universe, so that we can build bigger and bigger Hubble telescopes, so we can look further and further out into space, so that we can see more and more of the same. I don't know how big it is, but it's a pretty fur piece, as they say down here in the Ozarks. It's a fur piece out there in the universe. And so we spend all these millions and millions and billions and billions of dollars looking for, and here's a fact that came in the other day that I just thought I'd share with you. Do you know that no human being has ever observed two adult whales breeding, doing the big it? Now, we know that they do the big it. We know that they breed, and we can see that because they have babies. And so, I don't know who's conducting the research, but somebody is out there researching, and we have scientists all over the world jumping off of boats with scuba gear, going down into the water among the whales with video cameras, waiting to videotape the first pair of whales doing the big it, breeding. And I imagine that's a very important scientific research. And I don't deny that that's very important scientific research, searching for answers to riddles in the environment or in the ecology or in the life forms and out in the universe that we absolutely need to know. But you know, boys and girls, we got along for 5,000 years. 5,000 years without fluoride in the water. Over the last 50 or 75 years, we came to the conclusion that mankind was doomed to utter destruction without fluoride in the water, so we fixed God's mistake and we put fluoride in the water. But I want to alert all of you to this scientific fact, that we still have not visually observed whales mating in the wild. And God only knows how that's going to impact the human race if we don't find the answer to that, and shortly. I mean, it's on a par with global warming, I would say. Now, you know, there's something about this that smacks of a lack of common sense here. I got to thinking about this the other day, and I said to myself, if a guy came up and knocked on my door and said, I'm unemployed, and I need a job, and I would say to the guy, well, if you need a job, I'll put you to work digging rocks, because I've got fields down here full of rocks, and I need to dig them up. And the guy says to me, no, I don't want to dig rocks. I want to study the mating habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. I would say to the man, well, I can see that you're unemployed, and I feel for you, but I really don't need any information concerning the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs, and I don't want to hire you. And the guy prevails upon me. He says, wait a minute. This is important scientific research. It's important that mankind knows and understands the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. And I would sit there and say, well, why is that so important? What is it that is so necessary and imperative about me, George Gordon, knowing and understanding the mating habits of bullfrogs in Kentucky? And I'm sure that this scientist could come up with 55 reasons why this is very important research, especially since this research is what he's employed in doing, and he needs this. So I say, okay, I agree with you. This is important and imperative research. I go down to the bank. I go over to my banker, John Harlan. I say, John, I need $100,000. He says, George, what do you need this $100,000 for? And I say, John, I need it for the study of the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. What do you think my banker would say to me if I said, John, I need to mortgage my farm. I need to borrow $100,000 to hire this guy who is unemployed, so that he can study the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs? My banker would probably say to me, well, excuse me, George, but what is it about these Kentucky bullfrogs that you think is so important? And I'd have to have this scientist give me a list. He'd have to write this down for me so that I could report to my banker why it is that this scientific research is so important, so necessary to my farming operations here. So my banker, he sees the list, he says, oh my God, I didn't realize that the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs were threatening the existence of mankind to this degree. He immediately agrees to loan me the $100,000. Now, I've got the money, and I come back, and I say, okay, now, Mr. Scientist, go to work. And so he goes to work in his laboratory, and he's watching these bullfrogs. Now, I'm out digging rocks out of my fields so that I can produce grass, so that I can produce meat and milk and butter and eggs and all those things that people have to live from day to day. You know, like meat, milk, butter, and eggs are kind of important. But this scientist now, he says, well, not only do we need meat, milk, butter, and eggs, but we also need to know and understand the breeding habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. So I'm down in the field, sweating my butt off, with sweat dripping off the end of my nose digging rocks, while this scientist is up here in an air-conditioned laboratory watching frogs and dutifully writing down all of the observations that he's making. And he works on this for an entire year. And I come back to him and I say, well, have you discovered the secrets of the mating habits of Kentucky bullfrogs? And he says, no, we need another $100,000 grant so we can study them more next year. And this goes on year after year after year after year. I don't know how long we have been looking for the origin of the universe, but it's certainly as long as I've been alive, nearly 70 years, and we haven't found it yet. But my God, we have thousands of astrophysicists and scientists and astronomers searching for the origin of the universe. Now, God reported in a first-person report, two chapters in Genesis 1 and 2, and says, let me tell you where it came from. Let me tell you who made it. We have rejected revelation, and we're busily over here borrowing money from the banker, John Harlan, and spending millions and millions and billions of dollars searching for the origin of the universe and the mating habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. Let me ask you this. Would you mortgage your farm? Would you mortgage your condominium? Would you mortgage your future in your home to hire an unemployed scientist so that he could search for and possibly find the secrets of the mating habits of Kentucky bullfrogs. Well, I sure as hell wouldn't. And it makes me wonder, why in the world do we want to pay taxes to a government that wants to hire unemployed scientists so that they can search for the origins of the universe, which is already revealed to us? We already know. If we wanted to know, we already have the answer. And we want to spend millions and millions and billions of dollars to search for something that we've already got? Or we want to spend millions and millions and billions of dollars searching for the mating habits of Kentucky bullfrogs, which none of us really give a rat's rectum one way or the other? When was the last time you went out in the middle of the night with a flashlight searching around in the tule weeds getting wet and cold trying to watch two frogs breed? Who cares? I don't. And I sure as hell don't want to spend $100,000 to find out about something that I don't really want to know about. But I surely don't want to get in the way of all you good people out there who do. So let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And along that vein, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults. No children involved here. Homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. I tried teaching kids. Hey, listen, kids are only interested in fast cars and fast girls. They're not interested in education. But if you'd like more information on our homeschooling program, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service that's brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, health, history, economics, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. They're free. Just call us here at the law school and order. It's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, now, the Law Hour, an editorial review, and the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. And the reason for that is that most of these authors and publications that we use here on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, economic, or sectarian, or racial, or ethnic partisans, or they're something else, you know. And their viewpoint is not 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review, at least most of the time it isn't. And then conversely, those people, they don't necessarily think that everything that we have to say here on the Law Hour is worth repeating, and so they don't reciprocate by recommending and endorsing our program. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, so don't blame anybody else. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or the staff of this network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417 273-4967. All right, we're telling you about the dangers of fluoride. I gave you a list of citations here and quotations from a number of authorities that have been looking into this fluoride problem for a long time. It's really not a problem. Everybody that's drinking fluoridated water or fluoridated water are happy as clams at high tide, and I certainly don't want to get in the way of those people's happiness and success. I do not want to take your fluoride away from you. I do not want to cause any fluoride deficiencies in the human race, especially in America. I personally avoid fluoridated water. In fact, when I leave the ranch here, I take my own water with me. I load up gallon jugs of water, and I stick them in my motorhome, or I stick them in my machine, and I drive off to wherever it is I'm going, and I drink my own water when I get there. Now, once in a while, I have to take a shower. So when I go to the big city and I take a shower, I absorb 10 times more fluoride in that bath or shower water than I would if I drank the water. So drinking the water isn't your big problem, boys and girls. Honest to God, you could drink all that fluoridated water that you could get into your body over there, and it probably wouldn't harm you near as much as bathing in the stuff, because your skin is your body's third largest elimination organ. And it also is not only an elimination, but it's an absorbing organ. And when you get it wet with that fluoride on it, your body absorbs that fluoride right through your skin 10 times more. Now, the common additive to your drinking water supply and the ingredient in the toothpaste that you and your children use may be contributing to the increased rates of hypothyroidism and other health concerns here in the United States. And all of that without improving your dental health one iota. So what is this thing called fluoride? Well, fluoride is an element from the halogen group, and are iodide and chloride, and it's commonly added to the water supply as hydrofluorosilic acid, silicofluoride or sodium fluoride. Fluoride is also found as an additive in toothpastes and some mouthwashes as a tooth decay preventative ingredient. So the people that are putting it in your toothpaste, they probably, honest to God, believe that it prevents or prohibits cavities. So why is fluoride used? Well, fluoride is used to fight tooth decay in children. The key initial studies purporting to demonstrate its effectiveness as an anti-cavity fighting compound were performed back in the 1940s. Those studies, conducted in Grand Rapids, Michigan in 1945, in Newburgh, New York in 1945, in Brantford, Ontario, Canada in 1945, and in Evanston, Illinois in 1947, are now being called into question. According to Dr. Philip Sutton, author of The Greatest Fraud, Fluoridation, a factual book, Lorne, Australia, 1996, those studies are actually of dubious scientific quality. More recently, other studies attempting to document the effectiveness of fluoride have been conducted by John... Wait till you get this name. I won't try to pronounce it. Let me just spell it. Y-I-A-M-O-U-Y-I-A-N-N-I-S. Dr. John. We'll just call him Dr. John. Forget that last name. Examined the raw data from a large study that was conducted by the National Institute of Dental Research, and he concluded that fluoride did not appear to have any decay-preventing success, as there was little difference in the DMFT values, that is, the mean number of decayed, missing, or filled teeth. That's what DMFT means. If you're a dentist, you'd know that. That's decayed, missing, or filled teeth for approximately 40,000 children. So they looked at 40,000 children. They looked at their decayed, missing, and filled teeth in 40,000. Fluoride didn't help them a bit. It did not matter whether they grew up in fluoridated non-fluoridated or partially fluoridated communities. Dr. John J.A. Water, Fluoridation and Tooth Decay Results from the 1986-1987 National Survey of U.S. School Children, Fluoride 23, pages 55 to 67, published in 1990. Now, if you'd like a copy of this report, just a two-page report about thyroid disease, hidden danger in your drinking water and toothpaste, you can get that at thyroidabout.com. That's thyroid dot about, A-B-O-U-T, dot com. How's that? A larger study has been conducted in New Zealand. And there, the New Zealand National Health Service plan examines the teeth of every child in key age groups and have found that the teeth of children in non-fluoridated cities were slightly better than those in the fluoridated cities. Did you get that? So, the non-fluoridated cities had a little bit better tooth health than in the fluoridated cities. I can cite the citation here, but it's a long one, and you can get it by just going to thyroid.about.com and get this report, and then you can get all of these sub-reports along with it. Although children's teeth have improved steadily from the 1930s to the 1990s, this improvement appears to be independent of the addition of fluoride to the water. A study has yet to be conducted that specifically addresses whether the addition of fluoride affects the quality of teeth. God, I got to underline that one. Listen to this again. A study has yet to be conducted. In other words, no study has ever been done yet from 1945 to this date that has ever shown that the addition of fluoride affects the quality of teeth. Nobody's ever done a study to find out. Now, there's some 500 studies that show that it causes hyperthyroidism and cancer and 55 other diseases, maladies, problems. Lots of studies that show the side effects on fluoride, and they're all bad. I haven't seen a single study, a single article from any source whatsoever, pro or con, from either side, that has ever shown that fluoride is a benefit. Not a one. So if you know of any of these studies, now there's three studies that I cited here that were conducted back in the 1940s, and everybody that's ever looked at fluoride says those studies are all flawed. They were put out by the Army, for crying out loud, and DuPont and the American Aluminum Association for the express purpose of covering up the lawsuits that they were all subject to. I mean, they had a financial interest in it. So you've only got three studies, boys and girls, that's ever been done, that ever showed that fluoride had any benefits whatsoever, and those were done by the industries that were trying to cover up the lawsuits. Or trying to get rid of a toxic waste substance. And now, the other people, you know, that's the researchers and the doctors, and notice that these are all medical doctors primarily, or research institutions that are looking into it. People that have letters after their names, you know, these are the paid professionals. Normally, these guys are hired to turn in these false reports, false scientific reports to sell a product or some good or some science, like selling GMOs. Monsanto is out here constantly doing studies. They do their own studies because anybody else that does them turns out bad results. Monsanto can turn out a study and they can turn out positive results. It kind of reminds me of expert witnesses in court. Depends on which side they're testifying for. An expert witness, any judge will tell you, is a hired gun that will come in and lie for whichever side pays them the most money. That's all an expert witness is a paid liar. Their testimony is totally unreliable. It's totally partisan. It's always biased. And it's always based upon, I'm an expert, and so you should believe me. It's always subjective. I don't know, kids. That's what we're grown. That's what we have grown up with, and it's what we've accepted. And that's what this fluoride is all about. It's what we've grown up with, and it's what we have accepted. Fluoride is used to fight tooth decay in children. Excuse me. What about the rest of us? What does it do to the rest of us? 50 million people in this country, or maybe 100 million are children. And then there's the adults. There's the rest of us. What does it do to the rest of us? Anybody ever thought about that? You know, I want to arrest these diseases and these other people over here, but I got to be subjected to the medication in order to solve the problems that somebody else has got by putting it in my water supply. Well, I had a lady one time from Cortez, Colorado. I mentioned this a little earlier. She came to me and she said she didn't want fluoride in her water supply in Cortez, and what could we do about it? I told her, I said, there wasn't much that I knew of that we could do about it. And she said, well, would you research it? So I said, okay. So I got on to Lexis, and did a research and found that the Supreme Court had ruled on the subject of fluoride 17 times. Nine positive and eight opposed. That is, nine times the Supreme Court said fluoride is bad stuff, and eight times they said you can put it in the water if you want to. I thought, well, now that's pretty significant. Essentially, the Supreme Court passed it off on the states and said, well, the states have the primary responsibility for delivering clean water or safe water or dirty water or whatever they want to people. And this lady happened to live in Colorado where they banned the introduction of poisons into the water supply. I helped her write a brief, and she submitted the brief to the city council and said, if you put fluoride in the water, that's a decision that you have to make. But if you put fluoride in the water, the minute that it comes out my tap, we're going to court to litigate, because that violates Colorado statute. And for at that time, this was back in 1983, the city council decided that they probably didn't need fluoride in the water in Cortez, Colorado. And I was amazed that you could stop fluoride from being put into the city water supply. And that wasn't because she went down and testified. Everybody that testified was in favor of it. And the local people didn't know whether to be in favor of it or opposed to it. They didn't know anything about it. She was the only one that had done any research and came to the conclusion that it was bad for us. And then the legislature in Colorado said, if you're going to put bad stuff in the water, it's against the law. Fluoride is definitely bad stuff in the water. And except for it prevents tooth decay in children, there isn't any logical reason for putting fluoride in the water. And it makes less sense to put fluoride in the water because the only people that it purportedly helps are the children, and the rest of us over here have the side effects. Even if you granted that fluoride would prevent every tooth or every child from having any tooth decay whatsoever, wouldn't justify putting it in the water and giving me Alzheimer's disease, hardening of the arteries, or thyroidism, or hyperthyroidism. Now we find out that there isn't any difference at all. In fact, in studies, it's been shown that where you don't have fluoride, the tooth decay problem is a little bit less. Not much, but a little bit less than it is where you have fluoride, which demonstrates that the fluoride does absolutely nothing to prevent tooth decay in children or anybody else, which is the only reason for putting it in the water. And then it causes all of these other maladies. It causes so many maladies that those of us that are informed about fluoride have to leave the city because you have to bathe. You know, I could stay in the city if I didn't have to bathe, or if I could solve the bathing problem and get the fluoride out of the water. But remember, it's only in there one part per million. And keep this in mind, fluoride, boys and girls, does not dissipate from your body for every two parts of fluoride that enter your body. One stays there for the rest of your life. And the more of it you put in your body, the more certain that it's going to have an adverse effect, especially on your kidneys, at some point in time. A larger study has been conducted in New Zealand. There, the New Zealand National Health Service their health plan examined the teeth of every child in key age groups, and they found that the teeth of children in non-fluoridated cities were slightly better than those in the fluoridated cities. And although children's teeth have improved steadily from 1930s to the 1990s, this improvement appears to be independent of the addition of fluoride to the water. Now that is very significant. That tells us that fluoride is totally unnecessary. Now, not only is it unnecessary, but in addition to that, it causes a lot of side effects. So what are the concerns that are associated with the addition of fluoride to the water supply? Why are we concerned about it? Well, the most recognized problem with the ingestion of too much fluoride is dental fluorosis. This condition is characterized by the failure of tooth enamel to crystallize properly in permanent teeth. The effects range from chalky, opaque blotching of teeth to severe rust-colored stains, surface pitting, and tooth brittleness. This condition, though worrisome, may not be the key concern, at least according to some researchers. Dr. Phyllis Mullinex believes, based on her research, now notice again, this is doctor, see? I don't know if she's an MD or not, but that's a Dr. Phyllis Mullinex, believes that fluoride acts in a way that lowers the IQ of children. It makes your children dumb. And it's called neurotoxicity of sodium fluoride in rats, Mullinex. Dr. William Marcus believes that a study conducted by Battelli for the National Toxicology Program on the toxicology of fluoride shows that there are close or dose-related increases in bone cancer in male rats. Let me underline that. Bone cancer in male rats. It affects the IQ of children. It causes chalky, opaque blotching of teeth to severe rust-colored stains, pitting, and tooth brittleness. Dr. Marcus also questions the removal by peer reviewers of cancers at other sites in the rats as well. Especially worrisome to Dr. Marcus is the fact that the levels of fluoride that caused the cancers in the rats were lower than those seen in humans who ingested lower amounts but for a longer period. These levels are generated because fluoride is accumulated in the body and is not secreted. Fluoride is accumulated in the body. Fluoride causes cancer, at least in laboratory test rats, at higher doses for shorter periods of time. What does it do in lower doses over longer periods of time? We don't know. But we're watching you, boys and girls, to find out, because you are our guinea pigs. Now, Marcus was formerly the chief toxicologist for the EPA's Office of Drinking Water, but he was fired in 1991. I'm going to underline that. He was fired in 1991 after insisting that an unbiased evaluation of fluoride's cancer potential be conducted. Marcus fought his dismissal and was able to be reinstated after demonstrating in court that he was fired for politically motivated reasons. I wonder why anybody would politically be motivated to want to get a whistleblower fired. Gee, I wonder why. An article in the Irish Times of Dublin on August 16, 1999 reports that Dr. Hans Muhlenbergs, that's quite a name, Dr. Hans Muhlenbergs, research in Holland found that up to 4% of people using fluoridated water experienced health problems. These problems ranged from gastrointestinal disorders to mouth sores to rashes to headaches to forms of arthritis to more serious concerns such as cancer and neurological complaints. Okay, get all that? Now, there's a number of articles that have been written and a number of scientists that have studied fluoride, and I'm just hitting the tip of the iceberg. 500 studies over the past 50 years. We're talking about, you know, some big time studies, 500 of them. and they've been conducted now over the past 50 years. Here's another study over here, hidden danger in your drinking water and toothpaste. Fluoride and fluoridated waters link to thyroid disease. Studies dating back to the 1950s have shown links between Down's syndrome and natural fluoridation. Now, notice that this is natural fluoridation. There are places where there's fluoride in your water, and we didn't put it in there. Lonell Rappaport also showed how the age of women bearing Down syndrome children decreased in direct relation to the increase of fluoride in the water supply. The more fluoride that was in the water, the younger the age of the women bearing Down syndrome children. Even those who aren't convinced of the toxicity of fluoride should be concerned about the level of fluoride added to the water supply. The optimum level was set in the 1940s at approximately one part per million, equal to 1 milligram per liter, or microgram maybe. This was based on assumptions that the total intake of fluoride would be 1 microgram a day, assuming 4 glasses of water were drunk per day. However, current intake of fluoride comes not just from the water supply. A study conducted by researchers at the University of Iowa and reported in the November issue of the Journal of American Dental Association found that 71% of more than 300 soft drinks contained 0.60 parts per million fluoride. Toothpaste, beverages, processed food, fresh fruits and vegetables, vitamins and mineral supplements all contribute to the intake of fluoride. It is now estimated that the total amount of fluoride ingested per day is 8 milligrams a day, 8 times the optimum level. I say it's mg, it's 8 mg's, I think that's micrograms rather than milligrams. 8 times the optimum levels. Optimum level is 1 part per million. You're getting 8 times that. And we haven't got to the good part yet where you take a bath and get 10 times more than you get from drinking the water. Now, I've listed about 6 or 8 problems that you have here, health problems that come from fluoride. And we've just scratched the surface, kids. We haven't gotten into this thing hot and heavy yet. And we haven't got real serious. This fluoride stuff is bad for you. It's going to kill you. That's what it's going to do. But it isn't going to kill you in the morning. It's going to kill you over a long period of time, 30 to 50 years. You're going to die from some kind of a disease, but nobody's going to put that disease down on your death certificate, and nobody is ever going to accumulate fluoride deaths. So it's going to kill people, and we don't know how many or how often, but it's going to kill a bunch. And we're observing it, and we're watching it, and we're seeing it, and we have documented it now over the last 50 years or so. So next time we'll be back with more on this fluoride, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Remember that the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. There are times up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, everybody. Good night, friends.